Got something on your mind? Tell Lisa all about it. 203-333-9422. It's the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600.
Okay, and reporting right now, in terms of traffic and road closures and other new things, Andrew, 31 on the Merritt going southbound, new crash closing. What's going on? Andrew, you there? Okay. Exit 31 going southbound. Southbound or northbound? Andrew?
Yes, Andrew? Southbound.
Andrew's, okay, southbound. So that's being reported on various, so that's going to be a mess. Also, I'm looking at all the sites here, and I'm looking at the outages. News 8 reporting that 95 is showing a lot of traffic going right through exit 13. It's red, 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 from Stamford all the way to Norwalk, going northbound. Let me just see. Yep, it's a mess. It's a mess going northbound. It's going at 8 to 9 miles an hour right around exit 15, exit 14 on the ramp. As you continue up 95, as you continue up 95, going 95 south around exit 40 is only 5 miles an hour. So there's a bunch of, 95 south, pardon me, is also 12, 19, 14 miles an hour. It's sort of a mess out there. And as I said earlier, if you're just joining us right now, 203-333-9422, give us a call. Let us know how you're doing. Are you in the middle of some kind of a flood or a warning situation that you would want others to stay away from? A lot of downtown Westport is closed. A lot of roads are flooded. High tide still has not hit. And so we're waiting for the worst of this. Hopefully it will go away because the storm is moving at a very rapid rate coming out of our area. Joining us right now is a state representative from Fairfield, Kristen McCarthy-Vahey. She joins us right now. Hi, Representative Vahey. Welcome to the show. Good morning.
Good morning, Lisa. It's so wonderful to be back here with you.
Thank you. So I know Fairfield is also, I'm looking here on the site here, the patch in Fairfield. Fairfield police are saying, do not attempt to cross. You'll get stuck. Your vehicle will not be retrieved until the waters recede. There's a lot of flooding going on around Round Hill North, North Benson Road, and Center Street, where the railroad underpasses are closed, and Chambers Street also closed at the Interstate 95 underpass. So there's a lot of mess in Fairfield and Westport right now.
There really is. And ironically, just this morning, I was actually reviewing a bill that the governor was touting and signed this week about climate change adaption to allow municipalities to create municipal stormwater authorities. And we've seen this before here in Fairfield. We've had issues with our Rooster River, and always the railroad underpasses are a big issue in storms like this. And I hope, unfortunately, I think we're expected to see more storms like this. So I am grateful for our first responders and our police department for keeping us safe, but also that the governor and our state Department of Energy and Environmental Protection is moving forward some of these initiatives so we can address it in a long-term way.
Yeah, I'm always a big picture thinker as well. We're chatting with Kristen McCarthy-Vahey. So a few things I wanted to talk to, with you about, Representative Vahey. I agree with you. Something like this, we always think about the short term. We want to get through the morning. We want to make sure our road isn't, you know, our own car isn't flooded. But it's part of a bigger picture. This morning I saw that Connecticut may be one of the handful, maybe two or three states after this, to not be in a drought in all of the United States of America. And I'm not counting Hawaii. All of the continental United States of America. We may be one of the singular states because of this storm to get us out of something that would otherwise be a drought. And we don't think about the Northeast as ever thinking about drought conditions, but we've been here before. It wasn't that long ago that we had those ugly blue tubes trying to get water to Greenwich from the aquifer up in Easton and Bridgeport. You know the one I'm talking about, mm-hmm. Right on the side of the road. So I have a lot of questions for you as somebody who's been thinking about policy. You were chair of the, was it the housing committee, the planning committee? Go ahead.
Yeah, so forgive me, I didn't mean to interrupt. Planning and development actually used to include the Housing Committee. Housing is now a separate committee, but I chair the Planning and Development Committee, co-chair it.
So one of the things that that I'm very concerned about, that I was very concerned about during the session and I'm very concerned about now, is this extension of multifamily dwellings into suburban communities from the point of view of environmental impact. I was very, very upset that in the earliest iteration of the bill that DEEP couldn't even comment, if it had a comment, about a proposed development. My understanding is that that was removed. Is that right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. There were a lot of proposals that were brought before the Planning and Development Committee this year, as well as the Housing Committee. But yes, that's correct.
So how I know that you were the leader and the sponsor of a lot of legislation that equated Desegregate Connecticut and their aims and their goals with what ended up happening in terms of much more of a handprint of Hartford over development in Connecticut. And I know you represent Fairfield, and Fairfield has a lot of multifamilies on the boards. They have this huge one going up right off the Merritt Parkway at High Ho. And they're doing a lot in terms of diversity and affordable housing. How do you square that with wanting to plan for wildlife habitation, open space, conservation, and climate change? Tell me how you think about that as being such an influential member in Hartford right now.
The issues around the environment are absolutely paramount. And I think we have to reframe a little bit how we think about things when we think about how we want to grow and develop as a state. And whether that is within our urban cores, and I was thrilled that we have the new Community Investment Fund 2030, which is going to invest $875 million in our cities. But at the same time, we need to look at how we are growing and developing within all the communities, 169 communities in our state. And I saw an interesting tweet lately that was, just an exercise in looking at developing an island. And it just was a graphic visual of developing single family homes throughout an entire island versus multifamily units that would leave a lot of open space. Now, I'm not suggesting that every single 169 of our communities would have that, but I do think that we have to look at the big picture in terms of assuring that we preserve open space and protect our farmlands and provide the kind of smart growth that whether it's a single family home, like some of my neighbors are doing work on their own homes and providing stormwater runoff provisions within their own yards, or a multi-unit building, that we're looking at all of those pieces, how we construct, what the impact is on the environment. But the laws that we looked at in this session, particularly 6107, pieces of that bill have been under discussion for actually many years in our state, and looking at how we provide guidance and framework for our municipalities within what's called the Zoning Enabling Act, which is 8-2 of our statute, which for 100 years has been the statute that actually provides the framework and enables our states to, or our municipalities through that state enabling legislation, to create its own municipal regulations.
Yeah, but there's a different push and pull that went on this session about who should ultimately have control over their own town's development. We're chatting with Kristen McCarthy Vahey. I always want to get your name right, Ms. Vahey, but it's a mouthful, but I want to get it right on the radio. 203-333-9422. It's very interesting when I go to Europe and I go to England and I see how England's been developed. It's always fascinating to me that here's this old, old island of, 60 million people? And they've managed to keep their cities the cities, and they've managed to keep the country the country. And as opposed to America, in which we have this thing called the suburb, in which we did this outer ring of our own in-between American dream between a true urban city and the exurban, outside. Of course, we have a much bigger land to do it on. But I guess I guess my feeling about this is that I still believe that towns, generally speaking, I think that towns know best for their own communities. And I thought that the approach of Hartford was a bit heavy-handed about trying to solve all of the problems and blame all of the problems that we have in society, and we have plenty, on zoning. I just thought it was not a straight line. So I sort of disagreed with the approach.
Yeah, and I think, Lisa, as I said to my one of my kids the other day, let's not focus on the blaming, but let's focus on the solutions. And that's really what I hope to continue doing. I think that the conversation in planning and development is around zoning because that's the purview of the committee. And in a sense, you know, the committee work somewhat naturally silos work, and I think that's always one of the struggles in government is we have different departments and we have different committees and we have the purview within them. And I think that's one of the reasons why in the bill I pushed for the creation of a commission that would bring together some of these different groups so that we can talk on a broader level about how we go forward. You know, one thing we weren't successful, unfortunately, in doing was passing the long overdue state plan of conservation and development. And to your point, how is it that we vision and look at what we can do as a state and how we can work together to solve those issues? Because a singular municipality can't do it on their own. A singular region can't do it on their own. We've got to work together as a state and try and get out of that, the blame game piece, as you were saying, and really into empowering and I hope a more cooperative way of working together.
So, Representative Vahey, who's going to be on that commission?
It is a broad group. There is actually going to be an appointed commission. Typical in the legislative process, all of the legislative leaders from both parties in both chambers, as well as the governor, have appointments. And it's but it creates a series of working groups. And thankfully, that will be able to bring in a much broader group of people to be able to have a process that will be, you know, a public process where the idea is for bringing voices in that is in addition to the legislative process, which is one way that we bring voices in. But the group includes membership from the Housing Committee, the Planning and Development Committee, the Transportation Committee, and it also includes people who are members of various perspectives and stakeholders, municipalities in the state, from our planning association, attorneys who have expertise, and environmental leaders. We hope to all be a part of this conversation. It has a pretty big job to do. I'm hopeful that the group can really tackle some of these conversations and not just be, you know, one of those commissions that we pass and then doesn't really move forward. So I'm
well. I would just say, hopeful. With respect to, if you have a chance to appoint somebody, I always feel like the, you know, the deer don't speak English, the bobcat, you know, can't converse in Spanish, the stakeholders, which are the trees, the environment, and all of our critters that depend on us to leave them alone, never get a seat at the table unless we give them an advocate at the table. And I seriously hope that with the ability and the power that you have to find somebody, that you make it your business to find somebody on this commission who speaks for the animals and who speaks for the habitat.
Well, Lisa, I don't actually get to appoint anyone to this commission myself. Again, the legislative leaders do, but I will certainly be speaking with them. And like I said, I think there are a lot of people who are going to want to be involved, and the goal is through the various working groups. Those are not going to require that appointment. The working groups are going to end up being the groups, I believe, that end up having kind of the majority of that, the nitty-gritty conversation. I couldn't agree with you more. My husband just finished reading the book Overstory, which is a beautiful story about trees. We've been talking about it a lot. We lived on the West Coast for many years, and absolutely, we have to look at all of these issues. And as someone who has co-chaired the Coastal Caucus with the Senate co-chair of the Environment Committee, Senator Cohen, we know how important these issues are for our communities. But smart growth principles would, you know, that's the idea, is to look at how we are looking at the use of land and how that impacts environmentally, and also what it means for the people of our communities. And, you know, we're seeing now with the hot housing market has really shown a spotlight, and I think will continue to shine a spotlight on the tremendous need that we have for housing at all income levels.
Well, we have a need for housing, but we also have a need to restore existing housing. We can't abandon our cities just to go off and do something glossy and nice someplace else. We have enormous, in my view, I've lived in Connecticut over 30 years now. It's still more or less the same 3 million people. And what we've done is abandon the idea that our cities could be vital, fabulous, pedestrian-friendly, millennial-attracting places with wonderful walking areas and beautiful public parks. We've done it in a spotty way, but we haven't done it in a concentrated, I think, successful way. And that's just my opinion. But, you know, I have strong opinions. What can I tell you? That's why I'm on the radio.
Well, I completely share that opinion with you. We have to look at our cities and invest in them. That was the Transportation Committee did bike pedestrian safety and bill this year. And I have said for years, those vibrant town centers, those walkable communities that attract businesses, and really create that sense of place and space is absolutely critical. And one of the struggles and challenges that we have in Connecticut is that, you know, we do have small cities. We don't include, as so many other places around the country, those broader land areas. You know, Bridgeport being one of the smallest by square mile, I believe, in the nation. So it does make it tricky for us, but I agree completely. That's why I mentioned, I think, that community investment fund this year that we passed is really critical to being sure that we're investing in our cities.
Well, I hope the money is spent well. Christine McCarthy-Vehe, thank you so much. Kristen, my final word for you is that I think, since you're a big picture thinker, you ought to take a look at what Israel has been doing for the last 30, 40 years. Because when I see a state, when I see a situation like Elsa, you know what goes through my mind is, how are we going to keep this rain? How are we going to keep this water? All this runoff that's turning to muck and dirt, all of it that's being wasted and going way into places that we're never going to see it again, that it's going to evaporate. Israel has managed to sustain its water with only about a month of water in a 365-day year. And they do this because they have these extraordinary innovative ways, believe it or not, of saving water at the north of their country where it rains more and piping it to the south where it then irrigates plants and crops in the southern part of Israel. And they did it because they knew they were going to need it, because they've always been a desert climate and they wanted to create green in the desert. But in the United States, we're going to have to copy some of those mechanisms because we have less water than we used to. We can't afford to waste a storm like Elsa. It's a waste. All this water is coming from the heavens, and we're not saving it for the next time.
No, and to your point earlier, those kind of innovative solutions, but also trees, are really an important part of that, too. So you're absolutely right. We have to look at those solutions, and I love that, not having to reinvent the wheel, but I would say borrowing those brilliant innovations.
Thank you, Kristen. Kristen McCarthy-Vehe from Fairfield. Thanks for being on the show with us. We'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show coming right up.